We're doing Pirkei Avot. We're up to the fifth chapter, the sixth Mishnah. We had seen the Mishnayot in this chapter. They all revolve around numbers. Until now, they revolved around the number 10. And now the Mishnah continues and tells us, Asara devarim nivre'u ve'erev Shabbat ben Hashmashot. There were 10 things that were created at twilight on Friday. So Hashem is about to finish creation, and Hashem says, there are certain things that I want created at this last interval of creation. And these are going to be 10 things that are miraculous, and they're unique in that these are miracles that reflect Hashem's greatness. So we have a concept that's developed by the Rambam here, that whatever miracles you see, they were built into nature originally. Meaning, Hashem prepared the miracles in the nature of things so that when the time would come, this is what would happen. So if someone could prove to you that there's a natural reason for the splitting of the sea, we'd say, fine, right? The Rambam said that Hashem created creation with all these different plans in mind, that when the time would come, when it would be necessary, so the earth would open its mouth and swallow Korach. So there's a discussion among the commentaries how to interpret this Mishnah and how to interpret the idea of miracles, but that's the Rambam's development of this idea. Now, we see here an interesting thing, that there are exceptional times that require exceptional reactions, and even though they are the exception, Hashem has them pre-planned in creation. So that means there is this concept of planning for the exceptional. You'll say, I'll deal with it when it gets here. No, part of responsible planning is planning for the exceptional. One of the habits you guys should form in your time in yeshiva is saving money, putting money aside each month. The expenses only grow, and it's a big mistake when people spend their last penny. No one told me this when I was in yeshiva. I guess when you're in yeshiva, there's this thought that, I'm living off my parents anyways. This is what they gave me to spend, so this is what I'm going to spend. And it's a very bad habit. You feel like, this is what I have to spend. No, this is what you have. You should spend part and put aside part. And that's an important habit to get into throughout our lives, and you got to start with it. No one knows when he's suddenly going to need a root canal. No one knows when he's suddenly going to need a new pair of shoes, or even simple things suddenly happen. Someone steals your coat. Okay, now you need a coat. That's a hefty expense. So you guys are all going to ask me, if I'm not earning money, how could I save money, right? That's the question.
No, I'm going to say, if the cost of living is £10,000 a year and you only have nine, how can you say that if you already
in debt? So I think that you can't live at the cost of living being 10 and you're only earning 9. There are two things I always say. You can either lower the cost or up the income. And sometimes you have to do both. And sometimes you have to do one or the other. But no, you can't live that way.
Well, what if you've got no choice?
Why would a person have no choice?
You don't earn enough.
Look, I don't know, but most people can figure out a way of either cutting the cost of rent or cutting other costs or upping their income in a certain way. For most people, it is doable. You see that there is a way to do it. Sometimes the way to do it is taking on another job. Sometimes it means taking on another job on Matzei Shabbos, so on Friday morning, or getting up an hour earlier, or cutting some off time.
What if you on the tourist fees?
I don't know the legalities of it.
You can't work.
What?
You can't work.
I don't know. You're not allowed to work online? You're not allowed to make money working?
How do you make money online?
A lot of people make money online. There are companies, that there are a lot of illegitimate companies online. But if you find out about legitimate ones, don't go for the ones that, get them from recommendations. go and talk to friends. But there are a lot of people who do all kinds of things online. Sometimes it could be medical billing online. Sometimes it could be follow-up work for law offices. It could be translating. There's a lot of work available online. There are a lot of people who work online. A lot. You know, every week or two, I meet someone else whose main work is online. There are legitimate jobs out there that can be done online. You just have to find legitimate ones. I'm saying there are a lot of fake ones. So if you're just going to search randomly online, I think you're going to end up with 999 fakes before you get one real one. You have to talk to people and get real ones. What? So I guess that's what I have my gmach for. You specifically, if that's what you needed, then we could work something out. Usually it's true that sometimes you will need initial help to get started. So one guy here needed help to get his photography equipment to start being a photographer. So he got a loan and he paid it back over time. Another guy needed an internet connection. A third guy needed a laptop. You know, different people have different needs, but that's exactly what I set up my gmach for. So that's...
With you before. Go back 15, 20 years.
Okay. But that's the idea. And you'll find that there are a lot of people that are willing to help a person who is sincerely looking to get on their feet. But I'm saying here, this is an important habit for married life. It's an important habit for adult life. Get into the habit of saving money, not just spending money, and making enough that you could put a normal amount on the side. A normal amount means that if a couple has a year where suddenly he loses his job, she needs a root canal, suddenly they have another expense, they have a kid they have to take for therapy treatment for 3 months, it doesn't knock them into debt. They could wing it until they get back on their feet and get another job and move forward in life. Life does that to people. There are moments and there are times when suddenly you find yourself having to reorganize your life. We have to know. We have to prepare for the abnormal. We have to prepare for the things that are not usual. You see, Hashem creates the world, and in the last minute, Hashem sticks in a whole bunch of things because there are going to be extraordinary moments. Now, this is, I just said it in the direction of preparing for hazardous times, but there's also the flip side of it, too. I suggest that couples have a hiding place from one another. Your wife shouldn't even know it exists. And in that hiding place, you should have an extra piece of jewelry, an extra piece of chocolate that she likes. There will be those unexpected moments when you're going to want to have something to give her, and you should have it. Ideally, every Yom Tov you'll be able to go before the Yom Tov and buy something for her. But what happens that one time when you won't? This year, Erev Sukkos, there was a guy who had a family member in the hospital. And I have a gmach also for jewelry, where people, if they have jewelry that they don't like, or started differently. It started from couples breaking up engagements. And then both sides didn't want the gifts they got, and neither side wanted it back. And I said, I'll take it. I'll give it to poor couples. And that's what I do. So I have a gmach with jewelry for poor couples. And this guy was in this situation. So I called him up, and I said, you know, you obviously haven't had time to get a piece of jewelry for your wife. It's Yom Tov's around the corner. You have 10 days, but you're in the hospital with this relative. You're not going to have time. Why don't you send someone to pick this up and see if your wife likes it? But the truth is that there's no reason not to have a little hiding place where you have an extra piece of jewelry and you have an extra chocolate and you have an extra something your wife likes, because it's good to prepare for the unexpected. When Rav Mordechai Elio was in the hospital for 2 years, I think, he had in his house, he had in a place a special perfume for his wife for Yom Tov, and he had gifts to give her. I was so impressed that he had the foresight. He didn't wait for the week before Yom Tov to get his wife the gifts. He had it, and us men are very bad at this. We're usually running at the last minute to get something, and no, I gotta get it in advance. I tell couples, okay, I'm saying this as a businessman, but I still think it's a good idea. I say when you have a little bit of money set aside, so go to the guy who sells jewelry and tell him, I want to buy 4 pieces of jewelry. And then you choose with your wife, you ask her, what do you like? And then you go and you say, okay, I want to surprise you for your birthday. I say do it before you're married, but whatever. You say, I want to surprise you with one piece of jewelry, but let me choose, it'll be a surprise. Let's see which ones you like. And I hope the women aren't listening to this one. And then you go and she says, okay, I like this one. You ask her to put four or five pieces aside that she really likes. And then you tell her, okay, now let me talk to the store owner and you'll see when your birthday comes which one I chose. And then you go and you haggle with him and you knock down the price. You can usually get five for the price of four or get him to throw in something else for free and then knock down the price because you buy a larger quantity. And then you have them all wrapped up and you hide them. And then you have stuff for the next... And suddenly, and it's stuff. No, she doesn't know because she thinks you bought one. And most women, by the time the next Yom Tov comes, she doesn't remember what she saw in the jewelry store half year. What? Yochanan, I've given this idea to couples for the better part of a decade. No one came back with complaints. So it works. What? No, it works. Because, yeah, okay, you have to do it intelligently. I do leave you some of the job. But you do it in a way that she doesn't realize you ended up with all five. I recommend this for young couples. You know, usually they have money set aside. They're going to buy stuff for the wedding anyways. And don't forget, the price of gold doubled in the last 2 years. So it used to be cheaper.
I think it's a smart idea to spend money. It's important long term, but
doesn't have to be that much.
Of a couple also takes a lot of expenses.
Earrings aren't so expensive. There are certain things.
You say that.
So the women shouldn't have listened to this. What can I say? Okay, back to our Mishnah. So what was created at twilight? Veiluhin pi haaretz, the opening of the ground that swallowed up Korach, upi ha-be'er, and we have that fantastic well of Miriam that gave us water all those years, and no one knew it was thanks to Miriam until Miriam passed away, and suddenly they didn't have water, so they realized that all those years they had in the merit of Miriam, which is another fantastic idea that happens repeatedly in life. People are in yeshiva. Very often people ask me if they should switch yeshivas. So it doesn't matter if they're leaving Machon Meir or coming to Machon Meir. I always say, you won't appreciate what you had in the place you had till you lose it. You go to a different yeshiva, suddenly you see the other yeshiva has its pluses, but suddenly you realize how many pluses you had in the first place that you never even appreciated. That's the way we are. We have a bunch of things. Am Yisrael is 2 million people are getting water in the merit of Miriam, but they don't realize it until Miriam passes away, and suddenly, oh, no water. Now we know. For the last 40 years, we've had water in her merits. And it's the same thing in marriage. I always say every couple should go through a period where the wife is out of commission. It could be that she's in forced bed rest. It could be that she's on vacation for 3 weeks. It's one of the healthiest things a marriage can have. Because as much as you think you appreciate your wife, until you have to deal with it, you don't. Upi ha'aton. So we know the mule that spoke back to Bilam. So that was a fantastic mule that Hashem gave that capacity to have a mule talk. That was from the beginning of creation. Vakeshet, the rainbow, that the whole idea of there being a rainbow was an important creation. And that's another idea, that we have to have reminders of the covenant. So Hashem made a rainbow, so we should be reminded, hey, you misbehaved, you don't deserve it, but we made a pact. And it's a good idea, you know, women wear a wedding ring, so men, it might not be a bad idea to have in a modest place in your wallet a picture of your wife. It's not a bad idea to have some reminder of the positive in what you have. V'aman, the man, was a fantastic miracle for 40 years. So Hashem put that into creation. Somehow Hashem programmed that in the beginning of creation. V'amate, the staff that Moshe Rabbeinu used in doing all the miracles. V'ashamil, which was some kind of creature like a worm that when you'd put it on stones, so the stones would crack. They'd put like dye on the stone, and then this worm would go across the dye, and then there'd be a crack in the stone. So that's what they use to carve out the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to use any metal instrument with the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. So they use this shamir thing. Vaktav, the fashioning of the letters that was in the Luchos. Vehamichtav, the way it was written was extraordinary because you could read the Luchos on all four sides. Ordinarily, if you carve something out, so one side's going to be backwards. So that was a miracle Hashem made. And the Luchos themselves, which were 6 by 6 amos by 3 amos. So they had all kinds of miracles to them. You could roll them up, even though they were made of stone. Some say also the spirits that... there's a medrash that says that Hashem created them in the last seconds of twilight, and so Hashem created spirits, and they didn't get a chance to create a body, so to speak. It became Shabbos, so they remained without a body. Ukvurato shel Moshe, that extraordinary place where Moshe is buried, which you can never find it if you stand at the bottom of the mountain. It looks like it's at the top. You go to the top, it looks like the cave is on the bottom. If two people are standing on two edges of the mountain, each one thinks it's by the other one. Ve'ilo shel Avraham Avinu, that extraordinary ram of Avraham Avinu that would ultimately be sacrificed instead of Yitzchak, and the horns were used, the horn of Mashiach and the horn on Mount Sinai, and out of its innards was made the harp of David HaMelech, and a whole bunch of things. The Medrash discusses how it was divided. Ve'yeshumim haftzvat bitzvat asuya, and others say, also the first, I guess, pliers. So you could hold other pliers in the fire to make pliers. How do you ever make anything in a fire? So you needed your first set of pliers. Shiva dvarim begolem. So should we go over to Tanakh or do...
Where can we find out the pliers? Where we find out this?
No. No. That's, there is such an opinion. Should we do one more Mishnah or do Tanakh? How many people want to do one more Mishnah? How many people want to do Tanakh? Again, you got to raise hands. How many people want to do another Mishnah? And how many people want to do Tanakh?
No, you are cheated. You sell the Tanakh.
No, he said Mishnah.
Again, guys, how many people want Tanakh? And how many people want Mishnah? Okay.
Four.
Tough. But next week we got to do some Tanakh. We haven't done Tanakh in a long time. Okay.
I just studied Mishnah.
Remind me, next week we'll start with Tanakh. Shiv'a Devarim Bagolim. So the next Mishnah is a very important Mishnah. I don't know if we'll get to finish it. You have things that are unrefined. You have a vessel that you started fashioning, but you didn't finish fashioning. So that's called a golem. Golem is a vessel that you didn't finish making. You didn't put on the finishing touches. It's still a rough in the rough. So golem literally means like a piece of material that hasn't been refined. It's not really ready to be used. So there are people who are also in the rough. There are people who are also not yet refined. It's very nice that we call them that. Golem, sometimes people think, oh, you're a golem. That's like saying he's incapable. But no, golem is something that's not yet refined. So that means all you have to do is refine it. But there is capacity to get there. Vishiva bechacham. And there are 7 traits to a wise man. And you see, they seem to be the opposite of one another. A wise person is a person that's refined himself, whereas a golem is someone who has not yet refined themselves. But I think the key point here is the word not yet. And this is one of the big challenges in marriage. You get married and your spouse puts the bread on the table. And you look at it and you say, that looks like what they do in the zoo. Your spouse might answer, well, maybe I'm telling you something. have to stop and realize that we're all going to have points that are in the rough. And it's very comfortable and convenient to look at someone else and say, doesn't he know he shouldn't burp in public? And then you're going to say back at her, and doesn't she know that she shouldn't tell me I shouldn't burp in public? You could have a million things that people look at one another and they say, that person is not refined. Well, you know what? That's something that can change. And we're all there to grow. With patience and love, so then we will grow. What? It also has to do with culture, but some of it has to do with refinement. It's not only culture. We have to remember that the Mishnah didn't leave them as incapable. The Mishnah does not use the word golem as the incapable ones, but no, rather the ones that are not yet refined. And so, if there are points where we feel that our spouse is not yet refined, so then have patience. Part of what happens in marriage in a normal situation is that if there is mutual respect and love, so then we learn what one another values, and we start becoming like one another. There is osmosis. Things happen. We become like one another. Now it could go the other way too. Maybe you'll get used to having your bread on the table. That happened to me. I remember I have no issue with bread on the table. It's just that people put all kinds of filthy things on the table. You know, they put their knapsack that they just put down in the toilet. They just on the table too. I'm talking about you come to a yeshiva table. So you have people who just were in the bath and they just put their knapsack down there. And then they come to the table and they put their knapsack down there. And then they take it down and put it on the floor. And then they put their bread on that same table. So I don't know, to me it seems a little like not the way I'd like to. I wouldn't want to do it that way. So we have to have patience and let things ride a little bit. Things change with time. So if your spouse takes out the garbage bag and never puts in a new one, have patience. Have patience. And if your spouse never cleans after themselves, so have patience. And if when your spouse spits out the toothpaste into the sink, they never bother wiping it off if there are toothpaste. These aren't big things. But the Mishnah is going to describe things which are a little bit bigger. And even so, the Mishnah says it's about being unrefined and about gaining that wisdom. It is wisdom, but we can all gain it. And as parents, sometimes we forget that we're not born that way. You know, children, very often parents have no patience for their kids because you forget the kid really doesn't realize what's wrong with that. Part of being a parent is having patience. Any educator, you have to have patience. So the kids were eating and they're each supposed to have one treat, and then they tried to be wise Alex, and then one of them hadn't had their treat yet, so the other one said, I'll trade you. So they traded. So then he ended up with the treat that she was allowed to eat. She was allowed to eat because she was allowed to have a treat. He said, well, this was the treat you said we're allowed to eat. So then they both thought they'd get away with eating an extra treat, right? Wrong. I took it away from both of them. So this morning, one of the kids comes over to me and says, you know those treats you stole from us yesterday? So I looked at it like, so I'm a thief. Right. Okay. But stop. Does she realize that's not the way to talk to a parent? Or is it my job to refine her? Yeah. I'm her parent. So obviously, I'm not going to let that one go over, but at the same time, I'm not going to get too upset over it. It's not her fault. So I asked her, I said, how would you feel if I said, oh, you mean those treats you guys stole without permission? Would you feel very good that I called it, that you guys stole it? You wouldn't feel very good about it, right? So it's not a nice way to describe it. What?
If you steal with permission,
okay. Remind me, I have a story about that, but it's not fair to record it. So the Mishnah says Shiva Devarim Bagolim. You will find seven traits in one that is not yet refined, the Shiva Bechacham, and seven in one who is wise, who has already refined his traits. Chacham. Notice the Mishnah starts with the positive. Eino midaber bifnei mi shu gadol mimenu bechokhmah. If there's someone there who's smarter than him, so then he doesn't start talking, he lets the other one talk. He doesn't start talking. So this is a basic thing, and yet people lack it. Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh, they see that we've conquered the eastern side of the Jordan, so they come to Moshe, they want that plot of land, right? But they talk too much. Our sages say they presented their case in a way that went beyond what they should have said. Meaning they were coming and explaining to Moshe, and they didn't just say what they wanted. They came and started pointing out to him why they were right. Part of being smart is recognizing that someone else is smarter. And that means that I should want to hear them before I express myself. Now, this is one of the great challenges, and it's fantastic. Stephen Covey in his Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he points this out, but he's right on the mark. Chazal say it about Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Chazal say, why is the halacha like Beis Hillel? Because they were first focused on hearing what Beis Shammai has to say. How many of us are so focused on getting the other person to listen to me? If you'd only be smart enough, you'd realize how brilliant I am. Oh, what a frustrating world. They don't appreciate me. But Chacham, a smart person, says, hey, he's smarter than me. Let me hear him first. And this is one of the greatest assets you could have in marriage. If we can only appreciate the areas where our spouse is smarter than we are. Let's take a classical example. There's a family event, and I'll take an example that you guys probably don't even understand what I'm talking about, but it's Super Bowl weekend. You guys probably heard about this concept. There is a... what are they doing, rugby? There must be an Olympics in rugby or something, right? Something that everyone's into. The World Cup, okay. Or what do they call that soccer game that everyone was so into? There was that big soccer game then. I don't know if it was months ago, years ago. There was a big time soccer game that everyone wanted to watch. What? I don't know. But you guys can imagine there's this very, very important event going on where you've been following. You want to see that event. And the family's having a family get together on that afternoon. So the first thought that goes through your mind is, what's wrong with them? Who wants to come on such an afternoon to the family event? The second thought that goes through your mind is, they don't expect me to come, right? They'll all understand that I'm not going to be there. And then your wife looks at you and says, what do you mean you're not going to be there? Everyone's getting together. It's Grandpa Joe's 95th birthday. How could you not be there? And you go, I don't understand. You're a religious person. Honey, you don't believe he's going to make it to 100? Come on. We're going to celebrate the 100th together. You wish him 120 and you don't even believe in the 100th? Right? So your wife looks at you incredulously and says, you're going to be there. And you look at her and say, of course, my spirit's going to be there. My enthusiasm's going to be there. A lot of me is going to be there. My wife is going to be there. But I'm going to be watching the World Cup. So I chose an example that obviously you guys have no idea what I'm talking about. But there are other examples where your spouse is going to say, there's a family event, you should be there. And you're going to have a few good reasons why not. You have a project in the office, you want to rest, you're sick and tired of seeing these relatives. There could be a million reasons. Who's smarter when it comes to family relations?
The wife.
Oh. So, usually it's that way. Usually it's the wife. The Mishnah says, listen. Listen, you have to know other people's strengths. We're very often focused on our strengths. Let me explain to you why I don't think so. Well, why don't you first hear why she does think so? Eino medaber, he doesn't even talk, bifnei mishu gadol mimenu bechokhma, next to someone who's smarter than him. And smarter than him doesn't have to be in everything. It could be in this area. One of the great frustrations that couples have is that they both feel like the other one doesn't even hear me. And each one will promise you that they've tried. But maybe the key is what our Mishnah just said. Don't even talk. Listen. If there's an area where the other one has what to say, and you value what they have to say, so then maybe the key is to listen first. Husbands will very often tell me, I can't figure out what she wants of me. She says, should we go to the wedding or not? And I say, no. And then she gets all upset, but she asked me, what do you want? Yeah.
Sometimes by listening to them and making them feel special, maybe in return they'll start listening to you more and start moving that network of communication. And let's say if I'm having a debate with someone, it's different than I'm having an argument with someone. If I approach them with the angle of, I really sincerely want to believe what you have to say, I want to learn from you. I'm right, you're wrong, and let me tell you why you're wrong. It's a different conversation entirely. So when you approach this, the attitude I really sincerely want to learn from you and what you have to say, because what you're saying could be totally right, then maybe she'll return that attitude to you.
That's 100% true, Uri. I just want to explain what usually happens. You have a very serious project pending at work, and you have to give it in on Tuesday. Now, 2 weeks earlier, you wanted to take Sunday afternoon to work on it. And she said, it's our daughter's birthday party, I want you there. Now, Monday night, you're still ahead of time, and you wanted to work on it. And she says, it's been ages since you did homework with our little boy. You don't even know what he's learning. I want you to sit down and do it with him. You do that too. Comes Thursday night, and she tells you, we haven't had any time together. So you take off Thursday night to be with the family. Now you're down to 1 week left. You're back to your Sunday, and you're looking at your deadline, and you're way behind the schedule you wanted to be on. You look at it Sunday, and she comes and she says, you remember there's a family outing today? You don't want to remember. And you don't want to hear about it. And you have every reason to explain why you can't go to that. And that you might be right. All I'm saying is, hear her out. Chacham eino medaber. A smart person doesn't talk bifnei mishu gadol mimenu bechokhma. Hear her out. Maybe, and what very often happens is, when you'll finally hear her side of it, it's going to play itself out differently. From your perspective, you know what you have to say, but you're convinced that she doesn't. What I'm saying is, there are going to be times when the last thing in the world you want to do is hear her. All you want is for her to hear you, because you've spent the last week listening to her. You spent the last week doing things the way she wanted. And you really wanted to do this project a week ago. You kept bumping it off, and now you're already seeing red. It's at that moment that we have to remember, Chacham, a smart person, listens first. What usually happens with couples is you've hit boiling point. And at that point you say, I don't even want to hear it. All week last week, I took every minute I had off to be with the family. this week I must do this project. And she says, fine, have it your way, but I think you're missing a few points, and walks out of the room. And suddenly you feel like a dunce. Gee, I wonder what I'm missing. Then she says, did you remember you promised your grandmother you're going to pick her up this afternoon? You know your grandmother is counting on you and there's no one else who's going to do it? And you know it is her birthday. So okay, you don't want to come, don't come. But you know you did promise your grandmother. Oh, right. The Mishnah is telling us, you might have what to say and you should say it, but first hear. First hear, if there's something where the other side is smarter than I am, so then it pays to hear what they have to say.
So, I think the Rebbe was saying that you don't have to be
chochma. And again, Uri, everyone agrees with what you're saying when it's calm and pleasant. I'm trying to paint the picture of that Super Bowl, which I guess I knew you guys wouldn't understand what I'm talking about. But there are moments that are very important to some guys. I never saw a Super Bowl in my life, so I'm not one of them either. What'd you say, Dov?
It's all about the
Okay, to be continued next week, Bezrat Hashem.